Hey friends, this is Todd Henry. If you enjoy the Axon Creative Podcast, I want to let you know there's a brand new way to support the show. It's called AC Premium. You can visit acpremium.me. You'll get additional deep dive extensions to each podcast episode, ad-free episodes, bonus episodes pulled from the archives, access to the entire AC archive, and much, much more. Again, it's at acpremium.me. We'd love to have you be among the AC Premium subscribers. And if you're already subscribing, thanks for supporting the show. Also want to let you know this episode is brought to you by Headspace. Wouldn't it be great if there was a pocket-sized guide that helped you sleep, focus, act, and be better? Well, there is. It's called Headspace. Visit headspace.com/accidentalcreative for a free one-month trial. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry again, and I am your host. So as a 24-year-old line cook, Ella Marie Bennett couldn't stand the kitchen staff's poorly designed, cheaply made aprons. So when her head chef announced he was ordering a new batch, she blurted out, "Chef, I have an apron company." Even though she had no company, no business plan, just a glimmer of a design idea and a business license. Through hustle and a willingness to leap into the unknown, she built the first order into the company Headley & Bennett, and today is making aprons and kitchen gear worn by many of the world's best chefs and home cooks everywhere. Well, she documented her journey as an entrepreneur in a book called Dream First, Details Later, How to Quit Overthinking and Make It Happen. So if you're someone who has an idea, but you haven't been able to jump in, you're going to love this interview with Ella Marie Bennett. And I can't wait to share it with you here in just a minute. And by the way, if you are an AC Premium subscriber, make sure you stick around to the end. And after the music, I'm going to be sharing some of my personal takeaways from this as an entrepreneur myself. Before we jump into the conversation, though, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Headspace. So listen, wouldn't it be great if there was a pocket-sized guide that helped you sleep, focus, act, be better? There is. And if you have 10 minutes, I'm telling you that Headspace can change your life. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace really can help you feel better. Are you overwhelmed? I know a lot of us are feeling that right now. Headspace has a three-minute SOS meditation for you. Need some help falling asleep? Who doesn't? Headspace has wind-down sessions their members swear by. And for parents, Headspace even has morning meditations you can do with your kids. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can help reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. I've talked about this on the show before, but my favorite thing about Headspace is that it doesn't matter if I have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, I can find a meditation that can meet me where I am at that moment and help me find a bit of pause in my day, help me be mindful. If I need a creative idea, I can dive into Headspace, spend a bit of time disconnecting from the ping, disconnecting from the pressures of the world, and just get to it, right? Just empty my mind and get to it. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. So you know a lot of people have found tremendous value in Headspace. Headspace is making it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. So you deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/accidentalcreative. That's headspace.com/accidentalcreative for a free one-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now. So head to headspace.com/accidentalcreative today. We thank Headspace for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. I am super excited to welcome to the podcast today, Ella Bennett. She is the founder of Headley & Bennett, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. She's also the author of a new book that I devoured. I absolutely loved it. It's called Dream First, Details Later, How to Quit Overthinking and Make It Happen. That's what we all want to do. Ella, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
So excited to be here, Todd.
So just by way of background, could you share a little bit about your company, about Headley & Bennett? What do you do? And where did it come from? Where did the idea come from?
So it hit me like a brick in the head 8.5 years ago when I was a cook. I was cooking professionally here in Los Angeles. I hated our uniforms and I wanted to have gear that made me look and feel awesome and the entire team around me look and feel the way we made the food look and feel, right? We were working at a 2 Michelin star restaurant, so everything was epically perfect. And yet the people doing the work were not quite there. And so I wanted aprons and gear that made you look and feel like the athlete that you were. And it all started from there. I just wanted to make a perfect apron. And I hadn't thought about whether it was going to be a direct-to-consumer business or a wholesale business. Hell, I didn't know what any of those words even really meant. I just wanted to make the perfect garment for cooking, period, full stop.
And you did. And the book is, in many ways, it's kind of a, it's an exploration of your journey, right? You sort of extricate different moments in your journey and derive principles from that and talk about what you learned along the way and offer some really phenomenal advice to those who might want to follow in your footsteps. Not necessarily starting an apron business, but who might want to start something, whatever that looks like. The very first principle that stood out to me in the book was this sentence. It said, "Start before you stop," which seems intuitive. But then I started thinking about it, and I realized, wait a minute, yeah, how many times have I stopped before I even started? Could you maybe expound on that principle a little bit? What do you mean by that?
Absolutely. So, sometimes people, the first time they've heard of Headley Hammett, they're like, an apron company? What does that even mean? And here's the thing, it could be an apron, it could be a car, it could be a blanket. Like, it doesn't matter. Apron is what I chose, right? But really, what I was pushing forward was an idea and a belief and something that I was extremely passionate about. And that was the moment that helped me go from noodling on something to actually doing something with it. And that's the whole idea of start before you stop. You just got to begin sometimes and you literally have no idea where it might land, but the fact that you began got you further than where you were at that exact moment. And I believe that so much of life is learned on the journey and not at the observation spot of the beginning, right? You got to like leap into the ocean of life and feel things out and fail and learn and observe and then get your butt back up and then keep going, but with that experience under your belt. And that's the core belief of the entire book that I wrote, but also just how I got Headley and Bennett off the ground. When I started it, it was everybody just thought like, that's cute. Good luck with your like little idea. You're a cook at a restaurant. Like, what do you even mean? And you look at it now and it's such a different business than where it began. But if I hadn't started and I had just been so concerned and consumed with everything that could have gone wrong and like I've never had a business before and all those things that block people from starting, it's like I would still be standing there, right? Thinking about it. That's just not good.
Yeah, I think there's this misunderstanding. People think that a select few have it all figured out, and you have to have it all figured out from the beginning before you do anything. And to your
Correct.
point, I mean, I've learned the same in my own journey, and also just working with clients, realizing that so many of us are just kind of figuring it out as we go. We're making it up as we go along. There is no blueprint. It's more like you have a compass, and you sort of follow the compass, and that'll get you where you want to be, right?
Absolutely. I think the compass is that's such a good metaphor because when you begin, you think that there's going to be this straight line, right? Because you see magazines and you hear podcasts and you hear all sorts of things out there in the world. And you're like, you start and then you become successful and then you're an overnight hit and then you sell your company for millions of dollars and you IPO. And it's just really a windy, windy ass journey that includes many pitfalls. But with every pitfall, I learned so much and I didn't go to business school, but let me tell you, I feel like I got a MBA 4 times over the last 8 years with everything I've learned about working with people, how to pivot, how to adapt, how to run a company profitably. I started Headley & Bennett with $300. Now we're a multi-million dollar business. We have close to 40 employees, and we're in thousands of restaurants across the United States, but we're also a very profitable direct consumer business, selling all kinds of kitchen gear to the home consumer, but having used everything we learned in the professional space. And so I've never lost my roots along the way, which I think sometimes people do. And that's not a good thing either, right? You got to remember where you came from.
Yeah. Well, you wrote early in the book, you write about the importance of understanding your assets, understanding what you have. You know, you mentioned you had $300 when you started, which I think most people, I mean, frankly, would say that's ridiculous. That's not even close to what you need to start a business. I probably would be in that same camp, to be honest with you, but what do I know? And yet you write that what you have trumps what you don't. What kind of a mental balance sheet did you do when you had okay, on one side, I've got $300 cash in my hand, you know, that's enough, right, to start a business. Yeah. What kind of mental balance sheet did you do? And what should we be doing if we're thinking about starting something to assess really what our true assets are?
Absolutely. So in my case, you know, I looked at myself and I looked at the people around me in a kitchen, and I could tell that I was considerably more outgoing than a lot of people in there, right? And so I thought, okay, I have this connection to the restaurant industry. I'm also quite friendly. I can make friends, and I have a product that they don't have. So they're, without calling it product market fit, in my mind at that moment, I was like, there's people, they need it, they're gonna want it. I am so excited about being able to give it to them. This is what I have. My asset is me, myself, and I, my enthusiasm, my grit, my connection to the food space, and the fact that I work at a 2-Michelin-star restaurant. And I just really focused in on that. And so everything else kind of dissipated into the background. So I didn't worry about not having investors or a business plan or anything like that. And I was just so eager. I was really an eager beaver at 24, that I just started talking to people about it. And I would go to farmers markets and I would go to food events. And I'd ask my chef if I could work for free at different special events he was going to that were very big deal with other very big deal chefs there. And then I would just get in front of them and talk to them. And I really benefited from that mindset, because at the beginning, if I needed anything, I just needed to make, I had to make more orders. I had to make more accounts. I had to get more clients. And so I just never spent more than I made. And I knew that I was my asset and that my product needed to get even better. So I needed to talk to chefs to hear what else they needed. And so I would just kind of, in a very friendly way, grill people on what they needed, what they wanted, what they hated in their uniforms. And I was accidentally doing focus groups all over the place. I was talking to people and they were telling me what was working, what wasn't. And so my core product line was developed boots on the ground with chefs who actually needed the gear. And then they told their friends about it. And then the word just spread from there. But that sort of very hyper-focused effort to just think about, okay, well, I can't spend more than I make. I have myself. So I need to carve out time where I can put myself in front of people to talk to them about what I'm doing and be super excited about it, because I am super excited about it, and use my humble enthusiasm to get, you know, input, feedback, and which is, by the way, a chapter in the book, Humble Enthusiasm. And all of that kind of led me to get my core following of chefs that were a big deal. You know, I got Martha Stewart and David Chang and Nancy Silverton and Brian Voltaggio and Kristen Kitch, all these guys that are, you know, very well known in the food space. They became super fans, and fans by buying the product, not because I was giving it to them, because, by the way, I couldn't even afford to give them the product. That was really how I focused on that.
Well, that kind of takes us back to what we talked about before, this idea of, you know, starting before you stop. I mean, you just dove in and you started creating product, and you went out and you had people use it and you got their feedback, and you didn't have it figured out from the beginning. As a matter of fact, at the very beginning, some of your early product wasn't necessarily completely what everybody wanted to use. I'm trying to think of a kind way to say this, right? But like, you got some pretty harsh feedback about your first product.
Yeah.
And so what did that feel like? So you've launched this thing, you create your first product. I mean, you don't have unlimited resources at your disposal. And then you start getting negative feedback initially from your first round of product. What did that feel like, and what did you do?
So my very first customer was Joseph Centeno at Baco Mercat here in LA, and he gave me an order of 40 aprons, and that was literally the seed that started the entire company. I didn't have sewers or anything at that time, but I had an order, and I also had a chef that I worked for, so there was an extra deep commitment to not mess this up. And so I made those aprons, you know, kind of out of thin air. I found a sewer. We found a guy. He had a fashion store here in LA. He helped me figure out the first pattern. Anyway, long story short, we deliver the aprons. They look beautiful, but I didn't know the first thing about apron creation. So, you know, you got to test the materials. You got to make sure it doesn't shrink. You need to use good fabrics, etc. So I gave them to him. And a day later, he calls me into his office and he's like, Bennett, these aprons suck. And I literally almost died right there on the spot because A, the guy I worked for him, and he was my first customer. And I was like, I cannot and will not mess this up again. I'm going to make this right. And this all happened very quickly in my mind. And so I said, Chef, I will take care of these. Absolutely no questions asked. Give me half of them. I'll fix the straps because the straps were falling off and it wasn't the best system on the neck. And so he gave me half the aprons. He kept the other half. And then a few days later, I brought him new aprons. Any money that I had made on that first order went out the window. I didn't care because it was more important to me to play the long game with him and get him an order that was perfect. And, you know, I have to say, with that sort of gun to the head over those 3-4 days that I had to fix them, I figured out the new system that we had on our straps. And so we used really thick, beautiful American webbing and got brass hardware that adjusted on the neck. And, you know, that's the situation that happened to me, but it could be anything for anybody else, right? And the whole moment that the pivot in my head was, you cannot fail here. You are not allowed. It's too soon in the journey. And this is your customer. You must make him happy. Fix it and keep going. Yeah. And that's what was sort of playing in my noggin. And then sure enough, I gave him the aprons back and he was like, these are great. I love them. Thank you. And, you know, that was 8 years ago. And to this day, he still orders product from us. And he's a good friend of ours. He went to my wedding. Like, it bloomed into something because I had the balls to take responsibility for what went wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
It is. And, you know, I think a lot of people in that, this is a great lesson, I think, for all entrepreneurs, especially a lot of people in that moment might have thought like, well, that was a dumb idea. Why did I try to do this? I always try to teach my children. I have three teenagers now, and I try to teach them there are a lot of moments in your life where you go left, you go right. It doesn't really matter. You're going to end up where you want to end up. That's totally fine. There are going to be a handful of moments in your life that are going to be disproportionately weighted. And what you choose to do in those moments is going to affect maybe even the rest of your life, if not like the immediate future after that. And this seems to me like it was one of those moments for you. This was a moment where you could have said, well, you know what? What was I thinking? I'm just going to go back to my job and just do what I do. And instead you said, whatever it takes, I'm going to make this right. And that was an investment that has paid off, obviously, significantly in your case. And this kind of aligns with one of the principles you talk about in the book. You say that, you know, when you get somewhere, head to the next somewhere, right? I think a lot of people think that success is about the destination versus about the journey. You know, I always tell people success comes in layers, right? It's not like an event. It's like something layers on something, and you have to keep moving. So can you help us understand what that principle means and how do we decide what the next somewhere is that we need to go?
I love it. I love the phrases you plucked out from the book. So that one to me means you never rest on your laurels. And when you get to a big monumental moment, I'll give you an example. When I got our factory here in LA, 16,000 square feet, we brought everybody in there, sewing teams, cutters, you name it, shipping, all of it came to that building. And I was like, woo! We've made it. We're here. We installed the zip line. There was a tree house. You know, in my mind, I was like, I'm Google. And I very, very rapidly realized that a building is a building and it doesn't define your business, and that you actually just really need to keep creating more things and more great product and continue to acquire awesome customers to push the business forward. Right. Sounds logical, but you think that by hitting this milestone of getting this giant building that you've always dreamed of, when you get there, that that's the end of the road. And you don't really think about what's past that road. And I had to just kind of acknowledge what I did and say, good work, but you got to keep going. And that was just a learning lesson that every single point is going to get you to the next point. But when you get to that next point, that's not the end of the road. Like the end of the road is, you know, when you're gone, like when right. you die. But until that time comes, if you really love whatever you're doing, you have to keep creating things to keep it alive, just like a friendship, just like a marriage, just like a business. You have to, you know, pour fertilizer onto it and make it grow and grow and grow. Nothing is stagnant. It either goes up or it goes down. And I always tell my team, we are going up, everybody. That is where we're headed. And yeah, so from there, it was just like, great, good work, everybody. We did this. And now we keep on marching forward. And that is something that is important for everybody to know and to do, because every day you have to earn your place in the world. You know, yeah. It's not just, don't take it for granted. It could all go away tomorrow. I think COVID was a perfect example of that, right? Everyone thought the world was totally A-okay in so many ways. And then all of a sudden, boom, playbooks that had been around for hundreds of years just vanished into thin air. And you gotta be willing to figure out how to go to that next spot and not get stuck in the past.
You know, it's interesting. That's basically, and listeners of the show know this because I've talked about this a number of times, but you know, my business model is live events, right? So I'm at live events. I thought I had a pretty resilient business model. Like I've gone through economic, you know, upswings and downturns, and I'm like, hey, you know, when it's good, you know, there's always somebody who is doing well, even in a recession, right? So I'm like, okay, things are good. The only thing that could possibly disrupt my business model was, hello, global pandemic, right? We can't get together. But, you know, the beauty of it is, and I've spoken to so many other people who are in kind of that live event type space, and I'm sure a lot of your customers are experiencing this, you know, as restaurants, like, my goodness, you know, you sort of depend on people getting together, but so many restaurants have innovated and figured out ways to continue their revenue stream, which is incredible, and probably will continue doing that after the pandemic, and it'll be like another revenue stream. You know, oh, wow, yeah. We just doubled our capacity because we have the ability to do takeout in a new way now that we didn't have before, right? And same with me, like, oh, I can squeeze, while I'm traveling to events, I can actually squeeze virtual events in while I'm at the hotel, right? Like something I didn't even think about doing before. So in some ways, I think this has made us all so much more resilient economically than we were before.
100% agreed. I think it's made us resilient, and it's proven that we are so much stronger than maybe we thought we were. Mm-hmm. And that if you had deeply set beliefs in things that went away and you're still standing, like, hey, those things don't define you. You define you. Right? You make you. You are driving the car of your own life, right? So don't ever forget that, no matter what things went away in COVID, be it money or cars or houses or whatever, businesses, you can probably create it again, and you can probably find a way to adapt and adjust. And I think you're spot on, like the restaurant industry. Oh my gosh, talk about getting decimated overnight. I mean, pre-COVID, that was 50% of our business was making uniforms for restaurants. And then the other 50% was online. And our shift through COVID was so dramatic that now our business is 80% direct to consumers and 20% restaurants. And we also shifted to make face masks the day of the shutdown. So March 17th or whatever the date was here in LA, we changed our entire factory to make face masks before anybody was making them. And we did it through a buy one, donate one model, which we, you know, kind of came up with that same day, literally 24-hour pivot, no joke. And to this day, we have made over 1 million masks, donated 500,000 masks, and we were able to keep our entire company and then some employed, and helped a lot of our supply chain stay alive as different entities because of this shift that we did. And it had nothing to do with aprons. It had nothing to do with kitchen gear. And yet we showed up and, you know, we kind of did our part, and it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was the best thing I've ever done, because it was just like, you are stronger than you think you are.
Amazing. Just amazing. All right. I want to ask you about one more concept because you brought it up earlier. You talk about the importance of humble enthusiasm. I'd never heard that phrase, that combination of words before. Could you share what that concept is?
Yeah. It's an Ellenism added to the list. It is my interpretation of my approach to, I guess, when I talk to people about whatever it is that I'm doing. I just am very excited about stuff when I'm very excited about stuff. And I believe that when people hear others be enthusiastic about something, that it can rub them two ways, right? It could either be exciting or it could be annoying. And I find it leans more towards annoying if you're like, so look at how great I am. And here's all the things that I've been doing. Did I tell you that I'm doing this thing? Right? Like, that's just obnoxious. And so when you're talking about something, you want to just share your thing in a way that is exciting, but humble. And by humility, I mean, you're just pumped to get to tell them about something that you're working on. You're not telling them because you have all the answers. You're really just like, guess what? Look what I just found. This is so cool. And it's the way that you talk to your friends versus the way you would sell something to somebody, right? Like if you're walking through a mall and someone's like, I want to sell you this cream or this, you know, hair straightener or whatever, you like repel the person. You don't want to talk to them. But if your friend tells you about this really cool app she just found, you're like, oh my God, that's so awesome. Show me. I want to hear about it. And you're excited because there's this humility about how they're approaching you. And that's really what it's all about. You don't have to brag about things to get people into them. You need to just tell them, like you're telling your friends, about something cool you found down the street.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Absolutely love that. Well, we've been talking with Ellen Bennett. She is the founder of Hedley & Bennett, the author of the fantastic book, Dream First, Details Later, How to Quit Overthinking and Make It Happen. Ellen, if people want to know more about you, about your business, about your book, where would you send them?
Definitely go to hedleyandbennett.com, our website. Get an apron, get our gear. You'll love it. It's built to last. And then you can also follow me on Instagram at Ellen Marie Bennett and at Hedley and Bennett as well. And we're also on TikTok now, which is a whole new adventure, having a grand old time on there. So follow us on any of those channels. And thank you so much for having me, Todd. This has been awesome.
Oh, this was phenomenal. Just such a great conversation. And thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with our audience today.
Absolutely.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Thank you for listening. AC Premium subscribers, stick around after the music. I'm going to share with you some of my personal takeaways from the show. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.